Welcome to the week 5 Q&A session. And as last week, this week, most of the questions that were sent in were answered via email. They're more of a personal nature. So again, I've only just got, I think, two questions here that I'd like to talk a little bit about you might find useful. So the first question is, with that sense of stillness and movement, I approach settling the mind practice. However, I'm not able to stay still and just let thoughts be, i.e. appear, play out, and disappear by themselves. When a thought appears, I feel that I am, quote, cutting it off in order not to move the awareness. And when I let them be, I follow after them almost always. So, of course, this is the great challenge in this practice of settling the mind, is to find that balance, to find the balance of not being too tight and not being too loose. Because if we're too tight, often what can happen is not only will we cut off thoughts, but we can suffocate thoughts. Because often, like in daily life, our natural habit is that when we focus, is we tense. And so often when we first start this practice of settling the mind, and we know our minds are quite chaotic and we have this habit of following after our thoughts, then our habit kicks in. And so when we sit down and try to watch thoughts, we tense. So we are so tense, we're so tight that we are suffocating the mind. We're taking up all the bandwidth of our mind with this intense focus. So not only doing that, of course, we'll get quite agitated and get quite fatigued, you know. I often hear people saying that this settling the mind practice is exhausting. And I think this is why, is that we're just way too wound up and tight and tense. So if we're way too tight and tense, then of course we will get agitated and get exhausted. But also there's no space for any thoughts to come up. So we'll be there and nothing will come. So what we need to do, of course, is to relax. But then when we relax, of course, we relax too much and then a thought comes up and off we go. We follow it away. So we have to try and find that middle ground there between being too tight and too loose. In the beginning stages, what we'll mainly find is that we won't really be able to watch thoughts, but it will be only after the event that we've got carried away, then we'll recognize we got carried away. And then, of course, if we continue to watch, then we'll find that we won't be carried away as long as we were before. And then we'll find that we'll catch it when we're first beginning carried away. And then slowly, slowly, we will be able to watch thoughts arise and pass without cutting them off, suffocating them, and without following them. In the question here, the person said, just let thoughts be, watch them appear, play out, and disappear by themselves. So again, sometimes we have this impression then that this thought will appear, there'll be a bit of a story there for some time, and then slowly it'll disappear. Of course, that's often not going to be the case. In fact, if we're really observing very closely, the thought will barely come up, and then it'll be gone, gone, gone. So it may appear like we're actually cutting them off, but actually, because we're observing them, they've got no basis to continue. With this practice, just try to find that balance in the middle. And as Alan said, there are really sort of two approaches to doing this practice. We can have more the interested focus, paying very close attention to the mental events, or we can have a little bit more of a relaxed approach and just casually noting the mental events, noting the thoughts. So we can also try these two variations of the practice in terms of whether we're cutting it off or we're getting swept away. I think that the sort of the more lighter approach of simply noting the mental events can be very helpful for not getting swept up. Because if we're really closely paying attention, then either we may be suffocating or we find it very difficult because we're so closely paying attention to the thought that actually it grabs us and then off we go. Whereas if we're sort of a little bit more stand back and just casually note the mental event, that can help because then we won't be suffocating. And also by noting, i.e. give a name or a label to the mental event, that can help avoid getting caught up in it as well. Because if we can make the mental event an object by noting it or giving it a name, then we're free of it. We don't identify with it and follow it. So I would recommend trying this approach as well. Might find it very helpful. So that was the first question. And then the second question is a little bit more of a technical question. There are a number of points here, so we'll go through each of the points in this question. The person says, what is the difference between the direct experiences of emptiness of an arhat, first Bhumi Bodhisattva, and a Vijayadhara? Quite a lot to be said here. The arhat, of course, is the culmination of the Shravaka path. And generally in the Shravaka path, in those systems of practice, they don't even really talk so much about emptiness. So in the Shravaka path, what is seen as the obstacle or obstruction to achieving nirvana is grasping onto self, this self-identity, as Alan calls it. So therefore, we are to come to realize selflessness or no self. So often they don't even really talk about emptiness. They just realize no self and achieve nirvana through that way. Of course, when we come now then to the Bodhisattva path, particularly the based on the Majjhimika philosophical system or the Prasangika Majjhimika, then within this philosophical system, they assert that if you're following the Shravaka path and you really want to become an arhat, to become liberated from samsara, then yes, you do need to have a direct realization of emptiness, that a mere realizing of no self is not going to be enough. So even though in the Shravaka texts that they follow, there's probably not a lot of explanation on emptiness. Still, the Majjhimika assertion is that they also, of course, need to have a realization of emptiness to overcome the fundamental ignorance to achieve nirvana. And so then the question here is, what is the difference between the direct experience of emptiness of an arhat, first Bhumi Bodhisattva, and Vijayadhara? So, of course, then in the Shravaka path, when we first come to realize emptiness directly, where we don't become automatically an arhat, we become what's called a stream enterer. So maybe a more correct assertion, a question would be here, what is the difference between a direct experience of emptiness of a stream enterer and a first Bhumi Bodhisattva? Because the first Bhumi or first ground Bodhisattva is also on the Bodhisattva path, the person who has their first direct realization of emptiness. So, of course, in both cases, the stream enterer following the Shravaka path, the Bodhisattva following the Bodhisattva Mahayana path, that one direct realization of emptiness is identical. What's different between the stream enterer and the Bodhisattva, of course, is the mind that is supporting that realization of emptiness. For the stream enterer, it's a mind of renunciation, and for the Bodhisattva, of course, it's supported by the mind of bodhicitta. So there's a difference, but the experience of emptiness is the same. And of course, in both cases, we need to continue to realize emptiness again and again directly, and then eventually the stream enterer will become an arhat, and eventually then the Bodhisattva, the first ground Bodhisattva, will achieve enlightenment. And then the question here is also, what's the difference between those experiences and the direct experience of emptiness of a vidyadhara? The difference is that both in the Shravaka and the Bodhisattva path, there is no mention of very subtle mind or mind of clear light or rikpa. That in the Shravaka path and the Bodhisattva path, we are simply trying to refine this coarse mind through the shamatha practice to stabilize the mind, to achieve a much more subtle level of mind, the substrate consciousness of shamatha, or even to cultivate the even more subtler states of mind, one of the four levels of jhanas. And we use those subtle minds as the basis of our vipassana practice to come to realize emptiness. We unify those shamatha and vipassana, realize emptiness, and then slowly we progress along the path to nirvana, in the case of the Shravaka, and enlightenment in the case of the Bodhisattva. Whereas, of course, the Vijadhara is within the Vajrayana vehicle. And so, of course, here we talk about the three levels of mind, the coarse, subtle, and very subtle. So the Vijadhara, of course, is trying to break through even the subtle mind to the very subtle mind to realize Rikpa. So then that experience of Rikpa is a much deeper level of experience because it's a much deeper level of mind. But of course, it's again the same emptiness of inherent existence that all three of these practitioners are realizing. But in the Vajrayana path as a Vijadhara, that of course will have a much, much more profound impact. A little bit like the Bodhisattva's realization of emptiness will have a more profound impact than the Shravaka because it's supported on bodhicitta. And then there's another part to the question which says, when an arhat realizes directly emptiness and achieves nirvana, they are out of samsara and therefore have transcended the substrate consciousness, but they have not yet experienced rikpa. So what is the state between the substrate and rikpa that an arhat is experiencing? So again, a few of the points I mentioned before is that when someone follows the Shravaka path and first directly realizes emptiness, they do not automatically become an arhat. They're simply called a stream enterer. They've entered the stream through directly realizing reality. And then that stream enterer is often posited as going through some stages before becoming an arhat. Often they talk about the four results, that first we become a stream enterer through a direct realization of emptiness. Then we move to the next stage, which is called once returner, then non-returner, and then finally we become an arhat. So, of course, when we become an arhat, then we achieve nirvana, and, of course, they are out of samsara. But, as I mentioned, within the Shravaka and the Bodhisattva vehicle, we're using the subtle mind to realize this emptiness. So we don't transcend that level of mind because there's no real talk about the very subtle mind in those two vehicles. And then the last part of the question is, has a first Bhumi Bodhisattva transcended samsara and achieved nirvana? So again, whether we are following the Shravaka path or the Bodhisattva path, when we first come to a direct realization of emptiness, that is not enough to transcend samsara. That we simply, in the case of the Shravaka path, we become a stream enterer. And in the case of the Bodhisattva path, when we first directly realize emptiness, we become the first ground Bodhisattva on what's called the path of seeing. But then we still have to go through again and again, realizing emptiness directly again and again. And then we're slowly wiping out more and more ignorance. And then eventually we achieve the state of nirvana. So the Bodhisattva on the Bodhisattva path, going through these 10 grounds, would achieve nirvana at the end of the 7th ground. Because then they have eliminated all these afflictive obscurations all their ignorance that is blocking achieving nirvana. But then, of course, the bodhisattva still has to eliminate the cognitive obscurations, and the bodhisattva is doing that over the last three stages, or the three grounds, 8, 9, and 10, and then eventually they achieve enlightenment at the end of the 10th ground. They finally rid themselves of the most subtle cognitive obscuration and achieve enlightenment. But then, of course, if you look from the perspective of Vajrayana, Vajrayana, I think in general, would say that it would not be possible to achieve enlightenment merely by using a subtle level of mind. That a bodhisattva at some point would have to enter into the Vajrayana to gain access to the very subtle mind, the mind of clear light, the mind of Rigpa, to eliminate the most subtle level of obscurations to achieve enlightenment. So I think from a Vajrayana perspective, then even though you may be following the bodhisattva path, at some point you would need to gain access to the Rigpa or the very subtle mind to complete the path and achieve enlightenment. So hopefully that answers that question. There's a lot more to be said in that area, of course, but I think that might be enough for now. So that's all for this week. So hopefully you got something out of those two questions, and hope to see you same time next week.